me too.
Let's make a pizza.
Okay.
From New York City.
This is Dead Rat Pizza.
Who doesn't love pizza?
Don't stop, make it pop, DJ, blow my speakers up tonight. I'ma fight till we see the sunlight. Tick tock on the clock, but the party don't stop, no.
Welcome to Dead Rat Pizza 2.0, episode 2, probably. I don't know. I'm JP. I'm joined by Noel and Kyle. How are you doing, Noel?
I'm doing well. Yeah, like we're probably going to talk about it later, but I just got a PlayStation 5, and it was my birthday on Sunday, so.
That's pretty cool.
Everything's coming up great.
I like that we were originally going to do this podcast on Sunday, and you didn't mention that until 10 minutes before we were supposed to record. Like, damn, why did we
schedule it for this day?
You could have said no.
See, I was thinking we'd be all set by Sunday night, and then everybody would be all, like, celebrated out, and then I could just hop on, but nah, it did not seem like that. That was going to happen.
I like to imagine that you just forgot. You're like, oh, I've got Sunday off. I can't remember why. It'll probably come to me. Kyle, what's up?
I'm great. But I was thinking for our introduction, we should say the new title, Dead Rat Pizza, like the Beastie Boys, you know, just go full on. But, you know,
like shout it.
Listen to this thing like a dead rat pizza. And then you guys come in with the pizza. You know what I mean? Something like that.
Okay, that's
we're coming at you like a dead rat pizza, but we all shout the last line just like the Beastie Boys.
That's gonna be really difficult with the what do you call it, the lag. There's usually a second lag with these internet voice over IP programs.
I'm just throwing out ideas here, JP.
I'm on board. So we seem to have gotten a positive response to our return. I mean, nobody, from what I could tell, listened to it, but they liked that we posted it.
I downloaded it.
I also listened to some of it, so that's, you know, it is what it is.
Look at that, two listeners.
There we go, that's a positive.
They're both us.
Yeah.
I don't know how often we're going to do these. I feel like bi-weekly is cool because, you know, we're all busy boys. The main reason we didn't do one last time is because I was out of town. I went back to Minnesota for the first time since right before COVID. The last time I went, I got back, and a week later, the whole world shut down. So
you were just saying, let me avoid Minnesota for a minute, because it seems like every time I go back, the world shuts down.
Well, you know, there was just so many reasons that prevented me, you know, financially, time constraints. Every time I thought about going, something came up. And so I went back to do the KVSC trivia competition, which is something I've mentioned in previous podcasts. I know everybody that listens to this has listened to every single episode and has them memorized, so of course you don't need me to tell you what KVSC trivia is, but for Noel and Kyle, it's a 50-hour trivia competition that my college does every year that I'm helping out at for the last decade.
Oh, cool.
And I produce parody songs for that contest. If you go to goatposse.com, you can hear many of the parodies. Well, you can hear all of them. And
wait, that's Goat Posse.
Yeah.
So that goat posse and body, right?
You thought it was something very different.
Oh, goat pussy, yes. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I've been doing this for so long, you can hear over the years me becoming better at doing sound. The first one we did is so bad, and the ones we did this year actually turned out pretty well. We did Linkin Park song, a Sheryl Crow song. God, I'm blanking on the other. We did Barbie Girl.
Ah.
And nice. We Very did relevant. One more. And Thunderstruck by AC/DC. So it was a good time. And I guess it cemented that I should live in New York because I felt really out of place when I was back. And it was none more apparent than when I went to the grocery store to try to find oat milk. They seem to like oat milk in Minnesota, specifically St. Cloud, a very conservative area. It's a weird clashing because the college is very progressive, but the people that live around the college are not. And I walked around this entire goddamn store looking for oat milk, and then I found like the shittiest brand you can get. And then I on my way out, I noticed they have a spoiled little princess section of the grocery store where they keep all the vegan shit food and all the organic food.
And is that literally how they label it?
It was decorated in pink and sparkly stars.
What the fuck?
It was called like the natural section, and it was just off in a corner. And that's where they kept the kombucha and all of the good oat milk and like the organic bananas.
That is insane.
It was so that funny.
Crazy.
That's insane. Like, hey, do you have any like organic wheat bread? It's like, yeah, it's right over there in the little bitch section.
Oh my god, I thought that's what you were gonna say. You have to go through a different checkout line.
Yeah.
Sorry, sir. You have to go over there to the cashier with the lip piercings and blue hair. They're going to talk to you about, you know, how they're composting.
Yes. We only offer that in the they, them section of our my grocery God. Store.
Jesus. Yeah. It was really interesting. And, you know, I guess on the plus side, if that's the type of food you want to buy, you only have to go to one section instead of walking around the whole store.
Right.
What's weird, though, is St. Cloud, I had no trouble finding NA beer. They had a huge selection of non-alcoholic beer, which is crazy because I find it difficult to find it in New York. I found the non-alcoholic White Claw, which I thought was a meme until I saw it in person. It's excellent. It tastes exactly like White Claw, except instead of getting you drunk, it claims to be hydrating and like vitalizing and a booster for your day. Very funny.
So just like water?
Yeah, it's just water, but they use their sweetener.
Cool.
Okay.
White Claw, for those who have not had a White Claw, has a very distinct flavor.
Right.
And, you know, it's how they, you know, it's whatever sugars or whatever they're using. So this tastes exactly like a White Claw. It just doesn't get you drunk, which for me is what I wanted because I missed the flavor of White Claw, but I am 2 years sober.
There we go.
What else happened? That seems to be my only Minnesota story. I'm just doing our outline backwards. Oh, so I'm back to work now. I've been working the last last 4 days, and I still have another day, and then I start a movie. So I'm going to be real sleepy all the time. But nice. The other day when I was at work, a man approached me, and he said, "Hey, man, how are you doing? You look like you could use a cheeseburger and some big titties." And I was like, "Excuse me?" And he said, "I don't know, man. You look down. I thought that guy looks like he needs a cheeseburger and a couple women with big titties." And I'm just like,
"What?"
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would probably, I don't know many people that wouldn't want that.
Right? You know, I feel like that's...
Unless I just had a cheeseburger and some big titties.
Yeah.
I've already had enough titties today.
I feel like that's most people's baseline.
That's what I was thinking. Is like, you know, that would probably bring up somebody that was feeling down, but also like most people in a good mood probably also would want that. But yeah, he said it like two more times. And then he walked away. Nice. And it was just like, this was such a weird, I thought he was going to ask for money.
If I say, I thought he this was the introduction to him propositioning you. So at least you escaped without that.
Yeah. He's like, you know, I could also use a cheeseburger and big titties. By the way, do you have $5 so I could buy a cheeseburger and a escort?
Like, that's all he needs. Like, he's just $5 short. Or you never know. Maybe he was just like a charitable soul. Maybe if you had said, yeah, man, he'd be like, well, guess what's behind curtain number two? And then,
yeah. Get over here, Madeline.
Madeline.
It's like steak and blowjob day. It's cheeseburger and big titty day. I wonder too if I just have resting cheeseburger and titty face, because my boss also asked me, like, hey man, are you okay? You look down. And I'm like, I just look like this, dude. I don't know what to tell you.
At least he didn't ask you about the cheeseburgers.
Yeah. I mean,
that's when you have you know, something is going on. It's like, is something on my shirt?
Yeah. Is there a note on my back? Ask me about cheeseburgers and big titties.
I mean, I feel like that would be, that's a prime idea for a shirt.
Yeah. My cheeseburger and big titties shirt is getting me asked a lot of questions that are already answered by this shirt.
Yeah. Or just a shirt that says, I could use a cheeseburger and some big titties.
I have a towel that says, this is not a cum towel. Kind of the same thing. So I put out a call for messages on Blue Sky, and in classic buggy behavior, he asked us to talk about anime feet. I don't really have anything to report on. I haven't been watching much anime.
All the anime you've been watching, and there's no anime feet?
I've just been playing video games, dog.
Are there any
video games.
Consolation prize.
Jesus, Noel, you sound like you just swallowed the microphone. What did you just do?
My bad. I think I, like, got too close.
He also said, talk about the state of streaming and physical media or something, which has had an interesting update. Crunchyroll is terminating all of the digital downloads from Funimation. I think the app is just shutting down.
Right, which I had thought the app was already shut down.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, so it's not like they're explicitly shutting down those downloads, it's just they're closing the app, and so as a result those downloads are going away. I'm surprised they kept the app as long as they did. Honestly, like, there was a certain amount of things that didn't cross over, like Red and Blue Pokemon. If you wanted Bulbasaur, you had to go to Funimation. If you wanted Charizard, you had to go to Crunchyroll. But
yeah, it was like, a mess. I'm trying to remember if Samurai Flamenco made the cut.
I don't think
that was a Crunchyroll thing. There was a lot of stuff that was like, I wasn't sure which was which.
Well, there was this big list that was being circulated, and I don't know how accurate that list was, because one of them on there was Dragon Ball Super, which I'm pretty sure I watched on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Dragon Ball Super was just on both, because it's Dragon Ball. Why would you not want that available to as many people as possible?
I thought that was one of the first things to go over there, but who knows? Maybe I was watching it on Funimation and didn't know. I canceled my Funimation account pretty late, because I thought they just merged them, and they did not. So I ended up getting them to refund a pretty big amount of them.
Oh, cool.
Partially because my account got hacked. Like, somebody hacked into my account and changed my password, which I guess kudos to you, but I got, you know, like $50 refunded because of it.
Nice.
So that sucks. In general, I don't know a lot of people that ever downloaded those codes, but I know that people did. I had a bunch of them because they just came with the Blu-rays.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure I have some, because I have some Funimation Blu-rays sitting here. I know Psycho Pass the movie, I have that, and that had one of those on there.
better redeem that code.
Yeah, so I don't left. So I don't miss out on my digital copy of Psycho Pass the movie.
Yeah, it's real. I think it's really a bad time, though. You know, and I'm glad that at least these kind of visible examples are happening to at least let people know that, hey, that digital purchase you made, like, that is not actually like, you don't own that, quote unquote. You know, like, I have so many of those. What is it?
Ultraviolet. It's
the Movies Anywhere codes.
Mm.
And I redeem those, like, I do. But I just do it because I realize that, like, having an extra digital copy might prove handy.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't in any way rely upon it. Like, what? There's, like, it's, like, a few. It's, like, Fandango or Vudu and, you know, well, like, that they've all banded together. Like, I just can't trust that they're going to exist even, like, 5 years from now.
It can definitely be helpful, for example, if you take a train to Minnesota. And you're
spending, yeah, no, it's useful in the short term, but, like, long term, you know, that's not like a replacement for physical media by any stretch.
Oh yeah,
I had to get another Crunchyroll account so I could watch anime on the train because their offline viewing is only part of the MegaFan account, and I'm part of the pleb account or whatever the peasant version of Crunchyroll. And I couldn't upgrade because I pay annually, so I had to start a Crunchyroll trial at the mega tier. And I have to remember to cancel that. That's how I watched Chaos Head on the train.
Wow, I did not remember that Chaos Head was on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody did. But
that's the one about the guy who lives in a shipping container, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What?
It's all. We'll talk about it more in a bit, but I wanted to further discuss Buggy's question, I guess. So the Crunchyroll CEO did an interview with Verge of all publications about this problem and said, we're working on a solution and we plan to compensate people with equal value of their digital purchase, which is such a ambiguous thing, because
it really is.
What is equal value to my download?
Right.
You know, like, I guess if I have one series, you could maybe say that that's a $30 value and give me $30 in Crunchyroll bucks, and, you know, get a half a year free or whatever, but that's still not, it's not the same.
It isn't, no.
Because you don't have your show anymore. Now, presumably, you still have the Blu-ray that it came with. If you bought a Blu-ray, redeemed the code, and immediately sold your Blu-ray because you got the code, that's kind of on you. But it's still not, it's not equivalent exchange, as Edward Elric would say. It's a stupid reference.
Yeah, wow. Just going to leave that one there.
Yeah, wow. What else Crunchyroll has? They talked about how they're experimenting with AI, and the response to that from everybody has been, please do not do that.
Shut your mouth. Which,
like, they're talking about it with translations and subtitles, and he even talked about dubbing. He's like, the dubbing stuff isn't there yet, implying that when it is there, they're just going to replace actors wholesale.
Right. Which I will say, one thing I'm very surprised about is I was expecting, like, the filthier corners of, like, anime Twitter to, like, celebrate this shit.
Oh, they've already been celebrating it.
Oh, they have. Okay, yeah, because I know that's like a major craw from, like, the friggin' localization.
Yeah, the localizers
insert their Western ideals into my precious steel folded 1,000 times anime.
Bless.
And don't forget their woke agendas.
Bless your hearts that you two have not seen this. This discourse has been going on for months.
No, I mean, yeah.
I mean, really, I have seen the discourse. I just haven't seen it in regards to what the Crunchyroll CEO said.
Yeah.
Well, because the Crunchyroll thing is literally just like a day, like today or yesterday old. Like, that just happened.
Yeah, it was a podcast that just got released.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it's been, obviously been going on. And recently, I don't know if you guys saw the Discotheque thing with their...
the Lovely Complex dub?
Yeah, the Lovely Complex. Like, that has been a whole stupid thing. But I guess that's kind of slightly off topic of his question about
streaming. Yeah, I mean, it's related. I think that the, you know, love it or hate it, physical media is going to become a novelty. Right. The people in charge don't want to do it. They have intentionally created this market where it is hard to buy, and, you know, they're paying for it. Like, there's a really interesting interview on, of all places, Hot Ones or Hot Wings, whatever the Hot Wing interview show.
Hot Ones?
He's about the Matt Damon interview, right?
Yeah, he's interviewing Matt Damon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he talks about, like, you know, what changed in the industry that's making movies take less risks. And he cites DVD sales were, like, a huge thing. And then they killed physical media. So now they can't rely on that anymore.
Right.
And it's hard because, on the other hand, like, I think this was always the natural direction that things were going to go. You know, as soon as internet was strong enough to stream movies, why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah.
And even if the companies didn't, because,
I mean,
want-
even when the internet was not that strong, you could see that there were steps to try and make that happen. Because I remember, like, in the earlier days of Toonami, didn't they have that Toonami Jetstream thing?
Oh, yeah.
They were very much trying to play exclusive shows on that, and it was just like, yeah, nah, even though the internet could not maintain that.
Yeah. Well, and we had Neon Alley and, you know, other streaming services. But even if the people in charge didn't want to kill DVD and Blu-ray, I think it still would have happened on its own, because the average person doesn't care. They just want to watch the show. And if they can watch it for $10 a month on Netflix, they're not going to buy the DVD.
See, yeah, like, that's like the main point there. It's like, yeah, like, nobody's going to want to fill up their shelves. The average person isn't going to want to fill up their shelves. If they just have, like, a hard drive where they keep all the stuff. Or not even that. They just have a website that is runs on a server where all the stuff is being held.
Yeah.
I mean, you're coming at it from one area, but I do think you're ignoring that, one, Blu-ray and DVD, like, they're not going anywhere. It's just that the market is changing from it being, like, the general, like, mass delivery method to it being more like the Japanese market, which is aimed at a smaller, like, you know, audience, which is willing to pay more for, you know, like, the things which are unique in, to that medium, right? I mean, things like the special features and the things which have dried up on releases for a long time, on general releases.
Oh, like, yeah, definitely. Like,
the home market is healthy. It's just that now it's no longer, you know, like, you're going to find in every Walmart, every Best Buy. Now it's very much like, we're going to print 10,000 copies. And if you want it, pre-order, because it will sell out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and maybe I didn't specify clearly enough. That's what I meant by it's going to become a novelty.
Yeah. We need more stuff like the Amazing Spider-Man 2 Collector's Edition Blu-ray that's shaped like Electro's head.
Electro's head?
Yes.
But I know that Best Buy has ceased selling physical media, at least for movies. They still have video games, but even that section is getting smaller and smaller.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was on a Best Buy to buy Like a Dragon. And yeah, I was shocked that I didn't see that many Blu-rays.
DVD is being phased out, at least by some of the anime companies. Discotheque has stated that they're no longer making DVDs. I think Media Blasters is also done with DVDs. Crunchyroll,
I thought Discotheque was still doing like high definition Blu-rays for some of the, like, older shows they were doing.
That's SD Blu-ray.
You said not Blu-ray, then.
Actual DVD releases.
Oh, okay, my mistake.
Yeah, yeah, they're still doing SD Blu-rays, but DVDs in general, they're done with. I think they officially stated that a few years ago.
But that again goes back to like a specialty market. I actually, there's a Twitter account I follow that posts the weekly like makeup of what is selling, the ratio of DVDs to Blu-rays to 4Ks.
Yeah.
And DVD does still sell the lion's share. It's every time I see it, it's the most depressing part of my week. It's like 60 to 70% of the market. Like, and then, you know, 4K on a good week will be like 15 to, like the week that Oppenheimer came out, it did huge 4K numbers, like gigantic. Yeah. I think it was up to like the 15 to 20% of the disc sold that week. And Blu-rays, you know, again, kind of like 20 to 30.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like DVDs do sell, but we're talking about like, those are the titles that are in like a fucking Walmart.
Well, you know, and it's going to depend on what you're selling too. I would surmise, based on the decision these companies are making, that anime fans are more than likely to buy a Blu-ray.
Yes. It's a more discerning market.
Because anime on DVD just looks bad. And I'm somebody that does not care about video quality as much as audio quality. One of the driving factors for me upgrading to Blu-ray and then to 4K is that like animation just doesn't, it benefits very much from the higher resolution, I find. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's bad authoring that's causing it. I don't know. But I know that for years, I was annoyed that Yu Yu Hakusho looked so, so piss poor. And then I got it on Blu-ray. And I was like, yes, finally.
Mm. Yeah, that's definitely true. Like, there is definitely a stretch of an era where, like, anime looked so much better in Blu-ray as opposed to DVD.
Yeah. We need Justin Savakis to author everything. Well, he already is. I didn't have it in the notes, but did you see that Justin Savakis bought Animego?
Yeah,
I did. Yes.
I don't really.
He also just released a, he's been doing a lot. He has a new indie label for live action indie films.
Oh, so yeah.
Then, their second film, and he just acquired and is like taking over Animego, I guess. So.
It's literally what I just said, Kyle.
So then in that situation is
well,
is
no, Robert, I just bring it up to say that he's doing both. I'm not I understand that you say, I'm not trying to be one of those mansplainers who's like, I'm going to hear what you say and then claim it for myself. I understand. I just meant that it's like, he's doing a lot right now.
Yeah.
Which in that case, so is Robert Woodhead just like stepping down?
I think he's retiring.
Okay.
From my understanding, Robert, and I believe his wife's name is Natsumi. If it's not, I apologize, but I believe they're still fulfilling their Kickstarter obligations. And then after that, I believe they're going to be mostly hands off, but I don't know exactly.
Okay. Well, thanks, Robert, for all the anime. I still have my Gunsmith Cat stickers on my laptop.
Nice. I just finally watched Gunsmith Cats last year. I think you guys were here for that review. Right? Yeah. I never watched My Secret Santa this year. I'm such a bad person. I was supposed to watch Azumanga Daioh. Like, I can't even be fucked to watch Azumanga Daioh. I've been telling myself since that show came out that I would watch it. And I still have only seen the first episode. It was my very first issue of New Type USA. It had, I don't know what her name is, the little girl character with
Chi-chan.
Yeah, she was on the cover, and it came with a disc that had the first episode. I watched it like a dozen times and then never bought the DVDs because they were very expensive, and anime was nuts expensive back then in general. Yeah. But Azumanga
Daioh, it's a great series.
Yeah, I bet.
It's a
Are you a fan of Nichijou?
I have not seen Nichijou.
Okay.
But yeah, I've always heard that it's excellent.
And Azumanga Daioh was funny because like I remember watching it as a teenager and not realizing that the joke with the one male teacher is that he's a pedophile.
Yeah, well, and that's where Waifu came from, isn't it?
I think so.
You know, speaking of shows that were out when we were children, I don't know why I said it that way.
Oh my God.
The new Avatar TV show came out. I've never seen Avatar, but there was two very funny things that came out of that. One was a Onion article that said M. Night Shyamalan interviewed on new Avatar TV show. Looks like it isn't so easy to make an adaptation that doesn't suck shit. another
M.
one
Night
was
Shyamalan, funny. Like, you all owe me an apology.
Yeah, and I'm seeing people say, like, actually, his version was pretty good compared to this.
Oh, boy. The revisionism.
The other thing I saw is some, like, I hate to say this, but, like, Zoomer on Twitter saying, like, I was watching the new Avatar show and my grandma said it's not as good as the cartoon. I'm like, oh, no.
And your grandma?
We're getting to the age where I could have grandkids. Well, I'm probably not quite that old yet, but I could conceivably have an 18-year-old child, which is terrifying to think about.
Yeah, it could
have been pretty bad.
It could have just been that, like, his grandma watched the original show with her son.
That's also true, but
and then she's like, "Damn, this ain't as good."
But I mean, you know, like, that person could have been 20 when Avatar came out,
right? Yeah,
and they probably, it's like, fuck me. So let's talk about some anime stuff we've been watching.
Okay.
Oh no, I gotta do my mystery announcement first.
Oh yeah.
Oh yes, yes.
So I told you guys, I was like, I have to tell you something, and I just wanted to see a reaction. So,
oh God.
I was finishing up some of my, like, disc collections. Like, I was able to finally grab the last sets of Rama 1/2 that I don't have on Blu-ray.
Okay.
And there was a big sale, like, like, just out of the nowhere, that I was able to get all the collector sets. And I'm like, okay. And I got all those. And then I was looking at what else they had. And I did something rash. And uh-oh. I don't really know why I did it, everybody. No. I bought all of Naruto on Blu-ray.
Nice!
And I do mean all 220 episodes of original Naruto.
Oh, okay.
That's 8 Blu-ray sets.
That is still, yeah, that that's a lot of stuff.
Not as many as I would have thought.
Right?
Well, they're in the process of releasing Shippuden. Apparently, they just put out Slit 2. I did not elect to buy Shippuden. I at least had the self-restraint to hold myself back from making a very, very rash decision. But anyways, I own all of it now. I've never seen an episode of Naruto.
Oh. I was watching a bunch of Naruto the other day, just like, because I like to put on stuff when I'm working. It's like an ADHD thing. So, like, I watched, like, all of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z and GT while, like, editing a movie.
Mm.
And I put on Naruto and had, like, the first 20 episodes on. And, like, that show holds up.
It does.
I don't think it stays good all the way through. I imagine that the filler... I never watched all of Naruto, but I, you know, saw the first season or two when it came out.
I don't skip anything, so I'm going to watch all 220 episodes.
See, people always talk about, like, that year and a half point where it was just a bunch of non-canon stuff, but there were, like, fun little stories in there that like do things with those characters that like put them in situations where you're like, oh yeah, I wonder what they would do faced with this situation.
I mean, that makes sense. If you make 100 filler episodes, some of them are going to be good.
Right. There's one where Naruto fights a cowboy. There's one where like Rock Lee eats like magic curry and then fights a man made of lightning.
I like the episode of Bleach where they're all monsters. Like, I don't remember what they do in that episode.
Was it like a Halloween episode?
Yeah, I remember being tickled by that. And Bleach was so funny with its fillers, because I remember they caught up to the manga in the middle of a big arc.
Yeah.
And they're like, Ichigo and his friends are fighting, but let's take a look at an alternate reality for a moment.
Let's talk about this other thing that happened one time.
It was just like, and it was in the middle of like the Arrancar arc or something. It was very funny. Or Waco Mundo. So I watched half of Chaos Head on the train. I still need to watch the other half, obviously, but I find I'm really enjoying it. It's not a good, like, this is the best show ever, but it's a lot better than I was expecting, and I don't see a lot of comparisons to this, and maybe it's because it is not a popular show and not a lot of people watched it, but you can definitely tell that the people at least making the show, I'm not sure about the, because it was based on a visual novel.
Right.
The people making the show were heavily inspired by Serial Experiments Lane. And it just becomes more and more apparent the more you watch it. Like, stylistically, there's a lot of Lane in it. Like, using the traffic walking song to be eerie and use that for tension. Their opening eye catch sequence is very similar to Lane. The score is very similar to Lane and Boogie Pop. Boogie Pop and Lane are often put in the same conversation because they're stylistically very similar.
Right. And don't they have, like, similar staff working on them? Boogie Pop and Lane?
Boogie Pop and Lane have a ton of crossover. I don't know about Chaos Head. But, yeah, it is about a guy that lives in a shipping container, which is not addressed. It's just, this is how it is. And he's, like, 16 years old. Or at least, he's pretty young. He's, I think, like, a second year in high school.
Yeah. It's been years since I watched Chaos Head, but yeah, that's the only thing I really remember, is that he lives in a shipping container, just, like, surrounded by anime shit.
He's also a schizophrenic.
Right.
Which seems really healthy for somebody with debilitating mental illness to live alone in a shipping container. Especially when
he's in a transitory state. Give him some slack.
But his family seems to be fine. His sister visits him all the time and, like, gets him on the family cell phone plan. And, like, he seems to be well-kempt. He's always going to school in clean clothes. Nobody ever says that he smells. So, you know, and he doesn't have a job from what I can tell, but he has plenty of money for junk food. He's just surrounded by empty Coke bottles.
Yeah.
But he, like,
I mean, it's all those product placements. That's how he's getting paid.
There we go.
He is, he keeps talking to this imaginary version of his favorite anime character, and he's getting blamed for these murders. People are suggesting that he has split personalities and that one of his personalities is committing the murders. I don't know, because I'm only halfway through the show, but it's starting to be implied that he may not be schizophrenic, that he actually has a special power where his delusions become reality. It's a weird show. And it's got some really bad singing in it, but I'm liking it a lot. I've been meaning
right,
to watch
it
for a long time.
Yeah, I remember, that's another thing I remember, is that, like, the ending song is very, like, just jarring and out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, the ending song is just like, rainbows and kittens, we're having a happy time. And then the show is just people getting fucking murdered. Yeah,
yeah, dude, something like, you're always super special.
Yeah, you're always super happy. We're having a blast. It's wild. My I don't have the ability to play that song right now because I didn't connect my computer to the mixer, but check it out. It's wild.
It is a trip.
Kyle, you've been watching Delicious in Dungeon?
Ooh, yeah. I've also been watching Delicious in Dungeon.
Okay, so are you all caught up?
Yeah.
Okay, so they were on episode 8. They just released that. I've been having a really good time watching it. So I started watching it because of that. Did you see that? There was a YouTube clip going around a week or two ago about the main character running into some mermaids.
Yes, I did see that. I'd actually been watching since it began, just because I read a fair amount of the manga a couple of years back. And so I've been, like, pretty excited for this. Yeah.
And so it's about, it's like a fantasy series There's no art. There's no like, oh, I'm from another world or like video game bullshit. Like,
yeah,
it's just like a RPG like dungeon that exists, but there's no RPG systems. I just
exactly. Nobody's talking about their hit points or putting points into their skill trees or any shit like that. There are like job classes, because you have the main character who's a knight, and then his friends who are a wizard and a rogue and a, I don't know, pan man, a warrior.
And it's so it's a good setup. But I will say that despite that, it is very heavily inspired by RPGs. So
yeah, totally.
While you watch it, like, so they'll have these brief like food scenes where everyone will be cooking, and it looks like it could be ripped straight out of a Vanillaware game. You know, have you ever played like a Dragon's Crown or Odin's Sphere?
Oh, yeah. I've played my Odin's Spheres and my.
The food looks identical. 13 it's that exact Sentinels. Style of just speaking like, of mouth-watering food. And you'll want to cook, and you'll also want to play. Like, I don't know how this happened. I'm watching it, and it makes me want to play like four different RPGs at once.
Wait, so are you telling me that Cheeseburger and Titties Guy may have just been telling me to watch Delicious and Dungeon?
Probably.
I mean, if we're talking about Dragon's Crown, Jesus.
Yeah, it's a lot. So the show itself, though, I don't know. It's I just am liking how. I feel it's very. Oh God, how would you describe it, Noel?
I would say, you know, it's very, it's just very funny and very, it's cool to see, like, because a big problem I have with a lot of these, like isekai fantasy anime is that the characters on them are very, like, flat, and there's not much to write home about them other than, like, their class or what have you. But here, like, you have characters who do feel like multifaceted, like the main guy, Leos, because the whole caveat of the anime is basically there's this huge mystery dungeon where adventurers go to like find riches and stuff, but it's infested with monsters. And Leos and his crew, they just got back from a pretty low level of the dungeon, but they got wiped. So they don't really have money for supplies and food and stuff. So they decide, hey, what if we kill the monsters in this dungeon and then eat them for sustenance? And everybody else is not on board with that, but Leos is, because he's like really into entomology and flora and fauna. And so he's just like, oh man, I wonder what this monster tastes like. And I wonder, like, this monster lives in like a sort of aquatic environment. So what it tastes like? Seafood? Like, whoa.
Yeah. So, and everyone, and the elf girl is very cultured every time. She's just like, oh, you're making, this doesn't sound like food. I want just to eat what is served to me. I hate this.
Yeah.
It is a fun time. And like I think that it's,
everyone's very fun in the show.
It is, but I think that the thing which drew me to it is that, like, it is kind of half and half. Like, there is, I think a lot of the episodes that I've seen so far have been kind of just like, oh, like, we're gonna have like a fun one-off episode, and there's not necessarily a lot of stakes in the episode itself.
Mm.
But there is also a strong core, because when they got wiped, the mage had to teleport everyone away, who's Leos' sister. But she was left trapped in the dungeon, in the dragon's maw. And so they're on there's a larger quest of, we're trying to get back there and save her before she's digested.
Right.
And I think that, you know, like, as much fun as kind of the one-off episodes are, there is a nice through line of, you know, you'll see a character's past and kind of how or why they're there in the dungeon. And there is a lot more detail. It's not just as simple as like, oh, we're gonna throw weird fun things. I mean, there's been multiple episodes where they kind of go like, let's talk about dungeon economics,
right?
And you're like, excuse me? And they're like, yep. And don't even ask us about dungeon ecology. Like,
yes.
Oh, if you kill too many monsters on floor four, that'll just fuck up everything.
And yeah, because like, if you kill too many monsters on floor
all the monsters
on this floor, then they're just going to move to the next floor, and it's going to completely wreck that ecosystem.
And I feel that, you know, between the two, like, it's a good balance. You know, you're never just kind of, like, it's not super grim, you know, like, real dark dungeon. There's elements of that. It feels like it kind of is enjoying testing different areas of it. And so it's like a complex flavor overall.
Right. And there are just, like, great jokes throughout all of it. Like, a bit of a running joke is that they've made the caveat and they've decided, hey, we'll eat monsters, but we don't eat monsters that are, like, too close to humanoid, because that would be, like, borderline cannibalism. And so they run across these, like, fishmen monsters, and at one point the main guy, Laos, is just kind of staring at one, and then that's when, like, their rogue just, like, runs up and, like, slaps him in the mouth, and he's just like, but I didn't even say it yet.
And then he tries to argue, yeah, he brings up this whole point of, like, but see, these are mermaids, and they're very human, so obviously Christ. They're off. But then these are mermen, and they look like entirely like fish, and in fact, the only reason they have hair is because it's seaweed. And, like, that's really an affectation. That's, like, right. Clothing, really. And they're just like, no. Like, we're saying no. All demi-humans are off. Don't you understand? And then he does some weird stuff and, you know, is constantly... He just has, like, a weird food fetish, basically.
Everyone
else is kind of like, let's let him do that. But over there. I don't know. I've been having a lot of fun with it. It's at no point have I ever... Like, it's probably... I don't know. I haven't been watching a lot from this season, but I think it's a great watch. I'm having a great time with it. And Trigger's been doing an excellent job of animating.
Oh, yeah. I thought I had seen that they were working on that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there will be times where you have, like, a really big, like, triggery sort of action sequence. So if you're in the mood for that, get ready.
Dope.
Yep.
I think the only other anime thing I was going to mention was that one of the producers for Makoto Shinkai's movies has been arrested for soliciting nude images from a minor.
Oh, boy.
And I don't have a ton to comment on that that isn't, I guess, super obvious. Like, what a fucking guy, you loser. Mm. But I find it ironic that, you know, it was a few months ago that we got this interview that's like, Makoto Shinkai originally wanted to make Suzume an LGBT story, but his producers said that right. wasn't any good. It's like,
is it the same guy?
I don't know.
Wait, was that it? Like, I remember it being more like there wasn't supposed to be any romantic subplot in there, but then the guy was like, Makoto, baby, they come to the movie for the romance.
That might have been... I don't remember the exact interview, but I know that originally he wanted to make the other person in the movie a girl, and his producers are like, what if we make it a chair?
Which I can see that as well, because I remember when I saw that movie, there was like one girl in particular that seemed to like be like resonate more with the main character as opposed to like this random dude who showed up.
Yeah. So, just funny.
Just to say his name, because Makoto Shinkai has a few producers, so we're talking about Koichiro Ito.
Yeah. Mm. It's just a very weird follow-up story. The main thing that I've been doing is I've been playing PS5. I finally got one, and the reason I got a PS5 is because the PS5 got Final Fantasy VII. I'm imagining that meme of, what is it, Dr. Manhattan or whatever on the moon, and it's like, it's 1997, PlayStation has Final Fantasy VII. It's 2000 whatever, the PlayStation has Final Fantasy VII.
I thought when you mentioned a meme, you were going to talk about Chad Warden.
I was.
We actually started our conversation with talking about the PS quintuple.
There we go. So, yes, the PS quintuple.
Noel, that is why I said the PS5 got Final Fantasy VII. I said that like Chad Warden.
There we go, yes. Not like The PS quintuple. See,
but that is
it's slick.
That is why
it's
I
slick
got it.
White.
Yeah, you see my hair? It's white. You know why it's white? Because I'm in my late 30s. It's stress induced. So, I finally got a PS5. Noel also got a PS5. And yes.
I got a PS5 because of Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth.
So when you could finally just go to a store and leave with a PS5, I didn't have a job. Mm. And so I got my taxes back, and the first thing I did was buy a PS5. Well, not exactly the first. I was in Minnesota when it hit, but the next day when I woke up, that's the first thing. I got up, I went to Best Buy at opening time, and got a PS5.
That's and commitment.
It's an interesting, well, Best Buy opens at 10 o'clock, so I slept in.
It's less commitment.
It's a weird situation to be in because Final Fantasy Rebirth is still not out. At the recording time of this, it will be coming out tomorrow. But I bought this like a week ago, so I'm like, fuck, what do I do? Like, you know, I want to play a game, but I don't want to start a game if the game I want to play is coming out in like 5 days. So I've been playing a lot of demos and a lot of cheaper games. I bought Borderlands 3 and this Metro triple pack because it was less than $20 and I got 4 games. Borderlands 3, I don't have a ton to comment on. I just think it's very interesting that the Borderlands 1 came out in, 2010, 2012? It's been a while.
Probably, yeah.
It was a little bit before that. It was like a late gen PS3 360 title.
Okay.
And, it feels like the same game, but in a way that I like. It doesn't feel like much has changed, and I find it interesting that, you know, when everybody is trying to get cute with their formula, Breath of the Wild, I'm looking at you. Borderlands is just like, you know what? We got it right the first time. Here's another one.
Here's another one.
I'm having fun with it. I also, the Metro series, I played a little bit of the first one. I forget, what is it? It's like Metro 2041, or I forget what it's called.
I think it's 2033.
2033.
It's the first one.
And
it's based on a famous novel series from a Russian author.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's an adaptation that's been going on a long time now.
Yeah. I remember that first game being really tough, and this game is also really tough. And I wonder if it's because I didn't realize it was a stealth game. Because I went into this one guns blazing and it did not work. And the minute I realized, like, what if I just walk past this guy? That's when I started to progress in the game. So, my bad. That's all. I've only played it for a couple hours. I just wanted to comment on that. The other game that I've been playing before we get into the real meat is Octopath Traveler 2.
I bought
that so I could play it on the train to Minnesota because it is a 40-hour train ride. And I have mixed feelings on it.
Okay, which path did you start?
I started with Thief, and okay. I was like, this game is dumb. And then when I got to...
Tell us how you really feel.
I just thought the Thief story was lame, and it looks really bad on Switch.
The Switch version is not the one to play.
Well, that's what I have.
But I understand. You bought it because you wanted to play it on the train. You're not going to be able to bring...
I like how it looks on Switch.
I think it looks good on TV on Switch, but for what's essentially a Super Nintendo game, it looks like ass on the portable version. It's blurry and really hard to read because the font is so small because they optimized it for a big screen TV. And it's really kind of, it's an interesting perspective on how games were designed back then versus now. Because I checked out some just screenshots of Final Fantasy IX when I was looking through the PSN, and it looks so ridiculous because it's so big. Because they optimized that for smaller TVs. The characters are like comically huge. on Final Fantasy IX. And that actually plays really well portably, because I have that on the Vita. But once I got to the, what is this, the Inquisitor, whatever guy, that's when it started to like click for me. But I like the fighting. Like, I think the battle system is really fun, but I guess I wish it was a more linear game. Because after I beat chapter one of The Thief, I'm like, what the fuck do I do next? It didn't really give me any inclination on like where I should go. And I just wandered around and started getting one hit killed because I walked into the wrong place.
You walked into the wrong saloon.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know how much of it I'm going to be playing, because I really just, I bought a long game on purpose so I would have something to keep me busy on the train. But, you know, it's fun. But I like Final Fantasy VII more. Final Fantasy VII Remake, I finally beat the DLC. It was really tough. I don't know if either of you have played the DLC. Kyle hasn't.
I have not, so I moved my copy of like Final Fantasy VII Remake over to the PS5, and I thought if I did that, it would just give me that upgrade for Intergrade or whatever it's called, and it turns out it doesn't. And the only option I see to get that would be to upgrade to the next level of PlayStation Plus, and I'm like, I don't want to do that.
You know, it was really confusing. So, well, because that wasn't a free DLC,
right? I don't believe
so. Had you purchased it before?
No, I got like the game for PlayStation 4.
Okay,
through PlayStation Plus.
Are you planning on buying the PlayStation Rebirth, a digital or physical?
I'm planning to do Rebirth. Probably digital.
So,
because if right now there's an option, or you can pre-order Rebirth and you get the Intergrade version of for free.
That is what I did.
That's the way to do it. Right,
I got it double for free because my debit card bounced. Because my PSN for whatever reason is connected to my savings account, which didn't have any money in it, because there was a strike for a year. Give me a break. And I transferred over the amount of money to pay for the game, and it hasn't withdrawn it yet, but I was still able to download Rebirth and play the DLC. So I don't know if I'm getting charged for that. Come get me, Sony. But I guess I won't go spoiler heavy, because you know you haven't played it yet. I really liked it. It feels like a natural progression of the story. It feels just like any other level. I found it to be really interesting that it's a totally made up story. Like, it's not one from the core game.
It's an original.
I question how it's going to make sense in context of the main story, because in the original game, you just kind of stumble upon Yuffie. Like, you could beat the game and never talk to her, right? Or no, end up going to
Yuffie is an optional character. You have to, it's not necessarily an intuitive thing. Like, it's cool that you can miss her. But I don't think that she's not going to be an optional character in Remake.
I don't think so.
Let's be clear here.
Well, so I don't think this is a spoiler, because it's, you know, within the first 40 minutes of this like 7 or 8 hour DLC. So the Yuffie DLC is her infiltrating Shinra headquarters and trying to steal
material. It takes place simultaneous to the events of 7.
And I find that to be interesting context in the context of Final Fantasy VII, considering originally you just happened to run into her. And so now she like already knows about all of this stuff, and she knows who you are-ish. You don't interact with her, but she sees you at one point and says, "Who are those guys?" And they're like, "Oh, that's Avalanche," but it's like a side version of Avalanche. So it'll be, I'm looking forward to seeing how they implement her into your team with that dynamic now having been changed. But
definitely,
it's very good. It's shorter and longer at the same time than I thought. if and when you do play it, Noel, make sure you do all of the side quests in the town that you are interested in, because you can never go back. I did not know that. I should have been paying more attention, and I didn't do any of the side quests because I thought, oh, I'll come back to these later. And you can't. So I'm now doing them again through the chapter select option. It's really tough. So I would grind more than you think you have to. There's not a lot of enemies in the beginning, so it's hard to grind. But there is two options when you get into the Shinra headquarters to do a enemy rush a second time, and I would recommend doing that. I had a real tough time with the final boss until I was about level 40. But they start you off pretty high level. I think they start you off at like level 30. Did Noel get kicked from the call?
Oh yeah.
Uh-oh.
Oh, he had to go, he said.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, goodbye, Noel. I guess that was all for you for not. Yeah, the final boss is really tough. He has like 5 forms. And,
oh my gosh.
The other interesting thing, and I don't think this is a spoiler if you're paying attention and know how stories work, the DLC introduces a side character that joins your party, but it's a DLC, like it's a made-up character, so it's like, how are they going to kill this guy off? Because, you know, he's not part of the story, and I thought that was a weird choice on their part. I think they just did it so you would not have to face all the bosses alone.
I mean, I think it is fine, because, I mean, I've played 7. I played it for the first time during quarantine.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, if we're talking about the role, right, Wutai is this, you know, nation which has been, like, subjugated by Shinra, you know? And so, them as a rebellion force. Let's put it this way. It's not like they're going, oh, this character is from, like, this, you know, like maybe they're famously like had no parents and were all alone. They have a new character.
Yeah.
Like, what? But it's like within the universe of 7, you go, oh, it makes sense that this will be part of a more,
yeah,
you know, unified, like more strictly kind of like military outreach of some sort, even if that's on a smaller scale, more of a guerrilla scale.
Yeah. Know? She's just joined by another guy from Wutai and he's fine. He has a really annoying, power that when Yuffie dies, he sacrifices himself to give her health back, and it's really annoying.
Because I thought that, I was going to say that's so sweet.
It's the worst. I don't know if you can turn it off, but the problem is that no matter what his health is at, he does this, and it's like, motherfucker, just use a Phoenix down. We've got 15 of them in our item kit, and so
I see. So you really have to make sure that you're. I mean, that just, but I think that that's, if we're talking about like a way for the RPG systems to, you know, help with the narrative, I think that is something that is, you know, a little bit more substantial. It says that you have to watch out for her. And,
yeah,
you know, the game is like, she is the one who needs to be looked out for. And he is this, you know, like her attaché.
It is funny. It's just like a very Yu Yu Hakusho, like, I'm going to sacrifice myself so you live. And it's like, but you didn't have to do that. We already had a plan B. If you haven't watched Yu Yu Hakusho, just about every big moment in that show is like somebody.
I know. I've seen every episode of Yu Yu Hakusho.
Somebody's like, all right, this is it. I'm going to just kill myself to solve this problem.
Yeah, you know, that's how we do. Sometimes you just have to go put all your chips on the table.
But very good DLC. You had mentioned that people call it one of the best DLCs on the system.
I've heard people say like ever.
I don't like, play a lot of
top DLCs.
I don't play a lot of DLCs, but I would say it's just as good as the main game.
And that's what's unusual. I think a lot of DLCs end up feeling like, you know, like, oh, you kind of go like, this is like a really slight experience, or maybe it's just like cosmetics and something.
Yeah.
The kind that feel more like an expansion and are really good and as good as the game that they're being attached to are a rarity.
I don't think that they had this and just took it off the disc. I think that they made this as a in between, you know, because of the 4-year development cycle, but it really does just feel like it could have been part of the main game. And it's got
that's awesome.
It has a really long closing cutscene. It's got to be like 15 or 20 minutes. But it really is just an intermission, like it was called. It connects Remake to Rebirth really well, I think.
And I think fleshing out that world a little bit more, I mean, that's ultimately, I think, been the main thing to love about, you know, Remake, is instead of just this, you know, like you could view that, like, this is going a lot deeper. It feels almost like if Final Fantasy VII is the theatrical release of Lord of the Rings, and this is the, like, extended, you know, all the background, all the extended scenes.
Yeah, it's a good time. The other thing I wanted to talk about briefly is I've now played the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth demo. And I guess I can kind of talk about this without worrying about spoilers, because it is one to one pretty much what happened in the original game.
Right. You leave and then you go to Calm and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Nibelheim, actually. Oh, but he's telling the story at Calm. You're right. Yeah, it's just the story of how he met Sephiroth and the burning down of the city. It's a lot of fun. The thing that bothered me about it, and this is kind of a problem with Final Fantasy VII Remake as well, is it really does feel like they're just padding these games by making things bigger. And this is a problem with video games in general, modern games. You know, because like Final Fantasy Remake, I had a good time with it, but they took the first 4 hours of the original game and made it a 40-hour game. And that's
right.
Insane. Now, I think in some ways...
I mean, it's insane in some respects. I understand why it might not be for everybody.
In some ways, I think it made the story better, because it really drove home how important Avalanche was and their mission. Whereas in the original game, it's like you only spend 3 hours dealing with that, and then you kind of forget what they were doing in the beginning of the game. Because the enemy shifts pretty quickly from Shinra to Sephiroth.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, Final Fantasy VII, everything that takes place in Midgard, that's all Disc 1. And it might take some people 4 hours. I was taking a lot of notes. I think it took me 20-plus hours to get out of Midgard.
Now,
in Final Fantasy VII.
To be fair, I've played that game a lot, so I just rushed through it the last time I did it. But it is a very quick part of the game. The end of Disc 1 is Aerith when she gets got. You know, that's a lot. The Rebirth is supposed to go to the end of Disc 1. So we will find out if she's going to...
No, Disc 2. Because, again, in Final Fantasy VII, Disc 1 is all Midgar. When you leave Midgar, that's the end of the disc.
I am almost willing to bet you money that you're wrong.
No, because Disc 2... With spoilers for everybody, for Final Fantasy VII, the original, Aerith dies at the end of Disc 2.
I'm like 1,000% sure it's Disc 1, because it's a three-disc game.
Final Fantasy VII is three discs.
Yes. The last disc is just the final boss. I'm going to look this up. Final Fantasy VII, end of Disc 1. Let's see.
Am I completely wrong about this?
I think you may be.
You know what? You are correct. I apologize, everybody.
I played it very My recently, bad. Which is why I know that.
I played it recently too. For some reason, I just remember, maybe it is because I spent so goddamn long in Midgar, but like for me, that was like, oh, that was like a whole game in and of itself.
Well, and also, well, you played it much later in life. I played it when it was still pretty, like, the PS2 didn't exist yet. And so it felt a lot bigger than it actually is. The whole game's only 30 or 40 hours long if you play
it. I took 120 hours to beat that game.
Sure. I presume you were doing all the side quests and chocobo training.
Yeah. But, like, I was even using, like, modern things to, like, for example, not have to train the chocobos. There's, like, a way you can... like game it so you don't like you basically get like perfect chocobos with like RNG manipulation or something. So like even that I took 120 hours.
Well, I guess I'm not a completionist, but yeah. So Rebirth is supposed to go to the end of Disc 1, And then I assume the game after that is going to be the rest of the series.
Right. I do think they're going to, I think the last game, they said it's going to be three games. Like, that's going to be the final one. It's not going to be four.
But I guess to my original point, Remake really helped me understand how important Avalanche was. Because for me, not for you, but for me, Midgar was such a small part of the story that, you know, it didn't really, like, click for me. Just one, how much of a slum everybody was living in and how run down and shitty Shinra was causing all these things to be. And part of that's the graphics. You know, there's just not a lot of people in, what is it, Sector 7 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But in the new game, it's a, you haven't played Remake, correct?
I've seen bits and pieces, you know, nothing that would spoil, but like, I have seen the game. I do know, like, it is a far more,
it's a heavily populated area, and it's,
and I do think that is an area, like you said, where modern games, especially, I mean, I remember playing Final Fantasy 12, which was the PS2 game, and it's like, you're in Rabanastar, it's a big city, and of course, like, there's not, like, even in that game, which has a fair amount of NPCs, it doesn't necessarily feel like you're in a city.
Final Fantasy VII Remake does a really good job of making you feel like you're in a lively city.
Yeah, like a lot of people, a lot of, just like, you know, again, like bodies, right? Like,
you hear all of their conversations, you're hearing music change as you're walking past people with radios. It's phenomenal sound design. Now, My problem, however, is that they also tend to pad out areas a lot. And the Rebirth demo is really guilty of this. As you're walking towards the reactor in Nibelheim, motherfucker, it is so long. It's you're just running through empty areas. Occasionally you find a monster, but it feels like they're just like, I don't know, this, we want this to last 20 minutes, so just let's add a couple areas.
Not to defend it, but like in 7, it's actually a long hike to get to the Nibelheim reactor too. Like even in 7, not to mention like its appearance in things like Crisis Core and the other Final Fantasy 7 extended games, but like it's a long hike in 7. Like honestly, it's especially with all the random encounters. It's,
I guess,
not
I
a,
forget. I felt like it was dragged.
The mansion is right next by, but like to get to the reactor, that's in the mountains, and that is like that is a fair hike in every version I've ever seen it in.
Then it may be just been too long since I've played that section. I played through Midgar pretty recently, but I don't think I played much further than that. There's a really funny,
the mountains are really tough. Like there's a lot of the hard enemies in the game in the, you know, like in the hills between.
There's a really funny video that's going around. It's a cutscene from Costa de Sol.
Oh, the one with Tifa?
Yeah, where it's like Tifa is looking pretty fine in her bikini and Cloud is like looking at her cleavage, and then it cuts to a wide of Barret in his sailor outfit. And it's like that is one to one accurate with the original game, but you will still not be ready for that.
That's incredible.
It's really funny, but I'm looking forward to it. I wish Cloud and Sephiroth would kiss. It really felt like they were gonna kiss in the demo. They were kind of flirty, but you know, sometimes you gotta be, I guess, when you're in the military.
I mean, all of their sexual metaphors happen when the other person stabs, you know, when one of the characters stabs the other with their sword.
Maybe
each of them has an iconic scene where they impale the other person. I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
that's subtext, baby.
That's the real reason he took out Aerith. I'm still not. I know that the official pronunciation is Aerith, but I still want to say Aeris. It's to me, it sounds better, and it's hard for me to pronounce it correctly. I have to like double.
Just remember,
that.
It's supposed to sound like Earth. Like that's why her name is Aerith.
Oh,
that, and so Aeris with the S is actually like an improper localization change.
Yeah, that's fair. Fucking vocalizers.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not going to take credit for vocalizer. But I didn't see it until I made a joke where I ironically said vocalizer, and now I see it everywhere. So
there you go. I mean, there's, I haven't not seen it, you know, I haven't, you know what I mean? Like, maybe.
It would be really funny. There's no way to prove that I did it, but it'd be really funny if I was the first person to say vocalizer, because I was sitting there like, how come we haven't figured this out yet?
Yeah, like, it's right there, guys. Low-hanging fruit.
And it was such a dumb joke. It was for Summertime Rendering. I was watching the dub with the subtitles on, and they, like, the subtitle said something like, he was over here at 11:55, and the dub was like, he was over here at 11:52, and I was like, fucking vocalizers trying to travel through time? I'm not going to settle for this agenda. And
I want my 3 minutes back.
Give me back my 3 minutes. It was such a weird change.
That's pretty funny.
So, yeah, the only other thing I was going to say is Elden Ring DLC now officially has a release, at least window. They might have a release date, I believe June. I want to say June 12th or 22nd. I'm not sure. But
yeah, it's right around the corner.
You are going to... I didn't watch the trailer. I kind of would... I just want to be surprised by it. But it...
I think that's the way to go, especially for a From game.
It is great, going
but the visuals are the thing.
You're going to do some kind of a quest with Mikola. And to enter the DLC, you have to at least have beaten, I think his name was Moog. It's the guy that's protecting Mikola inside of a giant egg. And I guess you go and touch Mikola's hand, and that will bring you to the DLC. I think it's supposed to be pretty big. I feel like it's $40. I think it's going to be a long DLC.
I will say that I have played several From games now, and the DLC, even where like they repeat content, I will say that like the DLC is worth doing. It's never been like, it's always been some of the best stuff in the game for me traditionally.
Oh yeah. Everything they put out is great. I can't always beat it. Like, I don't think I beat the Bloodborne DLC. And I think
I did. Dark Souls... once you beat the lady in the tower, and you go into the fishing village, like, that's when that DLC gets, like, in my opinion, like, that's the good part of the DLC, and, like, the first part kind of sucks. But it is, like, once you get to that good stuff, it's just like, oh, like, they're doing the shit.
I'm just not good enough at video games, because I know the Dark Souls 3 DLC I couldn't beat either. Like, the I forget what her name is, but the final boss has like 3 or 4 forms. It's just too much for me. I keep getting beat up by the guy with his chair.
Aw, I'm sorry.
I think that's all I got. Have you been doing anything? You been playing any other games?
Well, I wanted to mention the one thing especially. So I will. So in the build up to this week, right, with all this Final Fantasy VII news, I think that
Advent Children. Sorry.
Yeah. So Fathom Events, they were doing, they finally showed off for the first time in American theaters, Advent Children Complete.
That didn't get a theatrical release when it came out?
No, it was, the Final Fantasy Advent Children came out in 2005. And then 4 years later, it got a Blu-ray release for the complete edition, the director's cut. And that was a huge deal at the time. That was when the PS3 came out, and that launched exclusively on Blu-ray. And it sold a lot of Blu-rays and a lot of PlayStation 3s. I remember it was a big deal. It was one of those weeks where it's like, oh, like, this random movie like really moved the needle. And it was, you know. But I'd never gotten a theatrical release. And I want to say this right up front. I've never been the biggest fan of Advent Children. Mm-hmm. It's never clicked with me. I say that despite owning... I might own every single physical home media release of Advent Children. I own like the original DVD. I own the complete on Blu-ray. I also bought the 4K right when it was released. And again, I bought this in a similar situation to Naruto. I kind of just bought it because I'm like, all right, you know, like, I guess I like Final Fantasy. I'll support it. I want to support them in general, right? So I invited a friend who I hadn't seen in I haven't talked to in person in like years. I'm like, hey, like, you're in the area now. Let's go see this. And we went, and I was kind of dreading it because I thought he would say no. But he's like, yeah, okay, sure. I've never seen this either. And I'm just like, the dread sweats. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh God, he's going to hold this against me. It's going to be another few years before we see each other. Damn. But we went, and I've never been more shocked by a movie. I've never liked the movie. Really? But the last time I watched it, I kind of hated it. Mm. And I was just sitting at the end, like, you know, when you're just like, I've had it with a movie, but you're still watching it because it's playing.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there like, I hate, and like the fact that it's playing is almost making it worse. And you're just like, if it like, stop it. You know, I just want this to be over, and it keeps rolling, and you just don't have the heart to turn it off, but that's not helping it.
That was you?
That was me last time. This time I watched it, and I loved it. This is the first time I've ever liked the movie. Like, legitimately, without, like, any weird caveats, or like being like, the action's good, but the movie's terrible. Like, I love the whole thing, baby.
I don't remember it super well. I like that you've bought this movie enough for three people. I've watched it one time, and I'm almost certain I torrented it.
So I think it finally clicked for me for a lot of reasons, but I wanted to say, I have a, do you want to hear my pull quote on
sure.
what I think the movie is?
What do you got?
If John Woo directed Scorsese's The Last Testament of Christ, that is Advent Children.
Oh, man.
Print it, put it on the box, baby.
I'll get Sony on the phone. They'll put that on the Netflix summary.
So the way I could, like, I, that is what the movie is. Just like, I just can't put it more succinctly than that. I think that the people in the world, if you made a Venn diagram of the people who like Mission Impossible 2 and Advent Children, that is a single circle.
I like that you chose Mission Impossible 2 when a new Mission Impossible just came out.
No, because that's John Woo's Mission Impossible.
Oh, okay.
That's why I specifically chose 2. Like, so basically, I'm saying if you're a big John Woo fan, then you should run. Run! As fast as you can to the nearest 4K supplier and buy Advent Children. If you also are a fan of Scorsese's The Last Testament of Christ, then oh boy, have I got a show for you.
It's so funny.
But if that does not sound like a good time, maybe just play Rebirth this week.
I feel like poll quotes are dead because home media is dead, and so is print journalism.
Well,
and also digital journalism. So there's no...
Because I spent a lot of time on that poll quote.
Well, we'll get right on that. We'll put it on the ultraviolet copy. It'll be part of the download code.
It was such a great time, and I feel that in the world where we exist, which is, I think people have largely been receptive to the Seven remake, in that it wasn't just like a rehash, you know what I mean? Like, it is kind of actively contending with it being a sequel of sorts to Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
In ways both literal and metaphorical. Right?
Yeah, it's interesting that the reaction to it is so, you know, with how the rebuild Evangelion films went, that reaction seemed to have mostly been positive, but the reaction to them doing the same thing with Final Fantasy, I see so much hate. But it might just be the circles I'm in.
I see a lot of people supporting it. I see more people supporting it for Ava, where it was kind of like, I think people didn't know for a long time that Ava was a sequel. I think they were thinking of it as a remake.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in that sense, it took a little for them to warm up. But I think that people initially, and I think I didn't like Advent Children because, like, I watched it last time. I had just beaten Seven, and that was a transcendent experience,
yeah,
playing Seven for the first time and beating it. And the 4K had just come out, and I watched it directly after. And if you're thinking about it as like, oh, I want an epilogue, I just want kind of a victory lap, and I want to see, you know, like what Aerith and, you know, sorry, we all know what Aerith's doing. Womp womp. But, you know, I want to see what, like, Tifa and the, if you just kind of want that Harry Potter epilogue of they're all adults and they're probably doing okay, then, like, Advent Children is not that. But if you think about it as a movie that came out 8 years after the original, and the original is that Titanic, you know, kind of experience, and them having to follow it up, like, it is doing a similar thing as Remake, but as Advent Children. And I think the moment it clicked for me is there's actually an epigraph at the beginning of the movie.
I don't know what that means.
Which is an epigraph. It's the kind of, it's like a little piece of text where it might appear at the beginning of a story, and it,
like, long ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah. That's like a form of an epigraph. It's just like a little piece that kind of comments on the thing and maybe gives you like a framing for it. right?
Gotcha.
But there's a little quote at the beginning, and it says, oh, I actually wrote it down. One second.
For true fans only.
One second. It'll just take me the 1 second. It says, to those who love this world and new friendly company therein, this reunion is for you. And it's directly addressing the audience that is coming to this as, you know, like wanting more Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
More or less. And then it has a little brief, you know, kind of montage of the events of Final Fantasy VII, treated with, you know, with this beautiful choir singing the Final Fantasy VII, like the iconic song. And it ends, and it's just like all of that, you know, kind of beauty and color and all this stuff. It said, that is happening and you saw it. But I think that the interesting thing about Advent Children is it says, if that was the Final Fantasy, then what's beyond it? Like now, like, but it says what's beyond that is that the fantasy is over. And then it cuts to this, you know, what is happening now 2 years after the events. And it's just all those kind of PS3 and 360 era, you know, grays and browns. And it says like, this is reality. Like we have to, you have to clean up the mess that was left behind in that game. You know what I mean? And it's just like, it hits really hard. And so noticing that kind of reframing and being more receptive to it, not having to be just like a traditional, like more Final Fantasy VII, but it asking like, what is beyond Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah.
That was really interesting to me. And then again, coming at like appreciating more of it, like being its own thing and not in it, trying to step out from underneath that and saying like, we're going to, like, this is its own movie. We're going to be tackling some of the same ideas with the same characters, but, like, it's a different, like, it's different now. And whether that's because it's a different team, whether it's because it's a different medium, well, you know, et cetera, it's just, it ended up being, like, a far more fascinating film than I had ever given it credit for. And the action is just as good as I remembered, if not better. So, a great time. I highly recommend it to anybody who hasn't seen it yet. Again, as long as you like Mission Impossible 2, you're going to have a good time.
If you don't, then go fuck yourself. Yeah, I've only seen it one time. I remember liking it, but I don't remember anything except the final battle where they do that, like, super jump.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff's all there. And I will say that the director's cut, because I wasn't...
There's two more jumps.
It was done 4 years later, and they added a lot of footage. It's like between 20 and 30 minutes of extra footage.
I wonder
that they did for that.
You know, I don't know which version I saw. When do you remember when the director's cut came out?
It came out in 2009. So 4 years after the original release.
Okay, so then I almost certainly did not see the director's cut.
It's well worth it. They learned a lot. Like both the technology's better. So every new scene, it like technically looks a lot better, but also they learned a lot. Like you can tell, like, oh, they learned a lot about cinematography and how to frame shots. And so every shot, not only is it better on like, oh, the environments look better and the characters are better animated, but it's just better shots.
Oh, so they like improve the animation and the shot composition of the original film?
For those scenes. And then some scenes have actually been so I guess that they must have had the original source files.
Yeah.
Because some scenes have been, they move the camera and the same scene takes place, but it's different framing, even though the exact same scene is happening.
And do you know this because of a behind the scenes feature? Or do you just have photographic memory?
Like, oh yeah. No, I did watch Advent Children, the original version, a lot. And I can, every single new scene, I'm intensely aware, like, this was not in the original. This was not in the original. So, you know, that's, all right, you'll know this. You know the shot at the end of the, during the Sephiroth fight with Cloud. Like, Cloud gets stabbed.
Kyle, I watched this, like, 15 years ago.
It's just an iconic shot. I thought there was a chance you might have remembered it. But that scene is still in the movie, but it is, they reshot it.
That's cool.
And you can tell this not only because it's a different camera angle, but even the music cue doesn't fit anymore.
Oh, interesting.
Because previously the music cue was timed exactly so that when the stab occurred, like a certain emphasis of a flute note was played.
Sure.
And it like was very carefully timed for that. But the same scene happens, the exact same action, except now the camera does like a 180 and it's on the other side of the sword and it tracks up it in a different way. and the score no longer fits the movement. So it's like one of the few scenes where I'm like, this is a quote unquote worse change, but it's only because the scene is lengthened a bit and its placement in the soundtrack is different.
Interesting.
So again, it's not just like as simple as they added 30 minutes of new footage. Like I think they probably added like 20 minutes or 25 to 30, but then there's a few shots where it's like, oh, this was in the movie before. This is just, they went back and did it over. So it's fascinating. It's not the kind of thing you normally see in live action.
Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah. Because so for live action, it's a lot harder.
That's what I'm saying. But like, you could say that's when I saw that, it feels like, oh, that this is like almost one of the features and promises of like what digital, like all digital filmmaking is, right? Like mm-hmm. if you have those original, you know, like pre-compiled shots, you can just put the camera on the other side and have the computer go, you know, like collate it all again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's fascinating to see like this is what digital filmmaking could be. You know, I don't know. It's interesting. So that was my time with Advent Children. So I feel that in our own ways, you've been playing Remake and you're playing the intermission section. And so you're all ready for Rebirth now. And
oh, yeah.
I feel that I'm almost ready. I feel that I was going to be waiting for a while to play Remake, but I might push it up now and I might go through them, you know, because I'm feeling it.
I think it's fair because I know you want to play them all in order, but since you've already played 7, I think you can break that rule. I think it's totally fair.
I think so too. I think I can push 7 ahead, and skip ahead and kind of it almost is its own thing in a way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wonder if it comes out at midnight. I might stay up late if it does.
It probably does.
Well, so that's all we got. I'm trying to think if there's any closing thoughts. I don't know. We've talked a lot. I imagine next podcast is going to mostly be about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So I'm sorry.
And Like a Dragon from Noelle.
And Like a Dragon.
Just wait, folks.
Maybe I'll catch up on Buchigiri. I've been busy. I've been working a lot. It's weird going back to work. Because I've been working from home on my own schedule, which is great because as long as I meet the deadline, they don't care what I do. So, you know, I'll work for 3 hours, then I'll take a nap. Then I'll work for 2 hours, then I'll play video games. Then I'll, you know, work for an hour, then watch Bob's Burgers. Whereas I'm back to going to a work site where, shit, man, Monday was like a 14-hour day. We were supposed to originally record Monday night after, or no, we were going to record Sunday, then Monday, and we changed.
Yeah, we pushed it to every day this week, folks.
But I was like, you know, I'm starting at 7. Yeah, we can do 10 p.m. If I don't get home by 10, I'll eat my hat. I was expecting to be home by 8. I got home at 10:30. Now, part of it was the commute, but part of it was just our day was so long and agonizing, and things were very poorly planned, and so things took longer than they should have. It's going to be a nice paycheck, but it was not fun doing it. Anyway, this has been Dead Rat Pizza Redux, episode 2, I guess, and we'll see you next time. Cheers!